Welcome to Chevron's Lock to Stargate podcast. I'm Chelsea.
I'm Jess.
And I'm Melanie.
This episode, we are talking about season one, episode 19, Tin Man. Before we get going, our usual spoiler warnings, we will be talking about whatever strikes our fancy, which usually includes episodes beyond this one, as well as our content warning. We do generally like to talk in an adult manner, so please be warned about that. This episode was written by Jeffrey King. This is one of four, I think, episodes that he wrote. It was directed by Jimmy Kaufman, his only episode. It aired the 13th of February, 1998, day before Valentine's Day. That's special. This introduces us, or no, Dan Shea, who we met, I think it was just like last week or two episodes ago, as Siler, as Jack's stand-in. He was already a stand-in on MacGyver and came to do this with him, and then auditioned for the role of Siler and got that role as well. So that's kind of cool bit of information about him. We also meet Jay Brazeau as Harlan, who was nominated for a Gemini for his work in this episode, which is basically, I think we looked it up last time, right? It's like the Canadian Emmys, right?
Yeah, guys, this is our second time recording this episode. 2 weeks ago, we recorded this, and it was just bad juju all the way around. Nothing was recording correctly. My camera kept freezing. My mic kept dropping in and out. And then we got to the end of a very torturous discussion that lasted forever, and I looked over at my recording app, and I saw that it had stopped recording at some point during the confusion. So we're gonna do our best to recreate the magic that was 2 weeks ago, but yeah.
Yeah, so take two.
Yeah.
Tin Man.
Yeah.
Melanie, why don't you give us a synopsis?
All right. SG-1 arrive on a seemingly abandoned planet of Altar and are soon knocked out. When they awaken with seemingly no ill effects, they hastily return to Earth. There, they discover that they've been turned into androids. To ensure their survival, they are forced to return to Altar to work with their last remaining Altarian, Harlan, who maintains the power systems of the underground city, but soon learn that Harlan is hiding something.
Okay.
That's a pretty legit synopsis. Sometimes
it is.
The synopses are like a little vague. That one seems on point.
Well, sometimes I feel like the synopses will just straight up spoil the episode, but then that one is like kind of cliffhangery.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the general synopsis of what happens. The episode opens right on the planet, which, depending on what part of the episode we're talking about, is either called P3X or PX3989. And the first shot is, I think, one of the first time we've ever seen an open wormhole from the back of a Stargate.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was kind of a cool opening shot where you could kind of see almost like the silhouettes of the team on the other side of the wormhole, and then it disengages and the team is standing there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a unique shot. I liked it.
I think it's also a good reminder, like, there is no, like, tunnel connecting the Stargates. Like, there's some sort of weird physics that's happening. Like, they're not just, like, a tunnel network. Like, they're just freestanding rings.
No, that's a good point. The wormhole only exists just in the Stargate.
Yeah.
There's not anything sticking out of the back of it. So they come through the gate, and Jack is being a goofy nerd and acting like a pilot. It's pretty adorable. He just is like, he's welcoming them like they just landed in a new city at an airport. And
local time is.
Yeah. Temperature is a balmy room temperature. He's a goober, and I love him.
Seconded.
So they notice that they look up, notice this weird ball thing hanging. They make a point of showing it. We all assume that it's the power source that comes into play later, but we actually never see it again, even when they're talking about the power source.
It gets implied.
I think that would be a very good assumption, because, like Jess said, it's implied that it's majorly important.
CGI budgets were real tight then. We just spent a lot of money on the whole Stargate, like, cool back shot, so you only get the power source shot once.
I mean, the kawoosh is...
The kawoosh, very expensive.
It's, I mean...
They didn't show the kawoosh, though.
I feel like we should also talk about the fact that Jack's walking around. And in the last episode, when we last saw him...
His leg was
very, very, very broken. And we don't really have a clear indication of how much time has passed since Solitudes from that episode to this. But I think the answer is not enough time to justify him walking around with no limp.
And, like, nobody being like, Jack, it's so nice to have you back mm-hmm. after your months and months of rehab.
Or, Jack, isn't it so great that we had all of that magic alien medicine technology that we found that one planet that one time?
I'm just going to assume that there's no timeline in this show, really. It's just like, hey, we're going to put this episode here, and we're going to put this episode here, mm-hmm. and Jack's magically going to be better. It's fine. And it happens multiple times throughout the season, or mm-hmm. series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, they lack physical fallout as much as they do emotional fallout yeah. on this show. When I first started this episode, well, when I finished Solitudes, I text you guys and I was like, are they at least going to acknowledge us in the next episode? And y'all were like, So you warned me, and then I started the episode and I was still like, oh, come on. I knew it was coming and I was still annoyed.
Yeah.
So yes, this is, I feel it's an important thing to point out. Jack is healed. Miraculously. Yes. I mean, we're glad about it.
Yes, delighted.
I'm pleased that he didn't lose that leg. That was mm-hmm. a very real possibility.
It's a very nice leg of his.
So they start walking around. They get the feeling that their tech is maybe slightly more advanced than theirs, but it all looks really old, even yeah. if more advanced. They don't think it looks Goa'uld in origin or nature. Mm-hmm. They come across a computer. And, of course, Sam can't help herself and starts pushing buttons.
It's shiny new tech. Of course she has to.
And then bad noises start happening.
Yeah.
And Jack decides he doesn't want to wait and see what the bad noises mean and tells them to retreat back to the Stargate.
I love Jack's, like, absolutely arbitrary notion of what is too dangerous and bad to, like, stick around for. And we got to get out of here and get back to the Stargate. Like, oh, sirens? Let's get back to the Stargate. But then we have other episodes where it's like, yeah, they're shooting at us, but I think we should stick around. Like, I think this is a time that we shouldn't go back to the Stargate.
I mean, but if you have people shooting at you, you at least know what you're up against. Whereas you have random sirens oh, going
no.
on.
An alarm. Oh, no.
I think it's also worth noting that we established that it didn't seem to be Goa'uld in nature. And they didn't immediately see anything that was necessarily super helpful or useful to them. So that could have also played into it. Like, no need taking any risks when this doesn't seem like a place that's going to offer any new intel or anything useful to them. So,
yeah.
Right. But they decide to retreat to the Stargate and they start doing so at what I thought was a very leisurely pace. They're just like, let's get out of here. And then they're just like, okay, walking back.
They're strolling.
Let Maybe Jack's stroll. Broken leg wasn't as healed as we thought, and the team is just trying to, like, make him feel better because he can't keep up with the full run.
Maybe. So as they're walking back, they get struck by some electricity thing, and they all crumple to the ground.
Their acting was not on the best display when they crumpled to the ground.
No.
I was just going to say that. Super awkward. It was, like, ready and fall. And
but then... not, like, quickly. Like, sort of awkward, like, slump.
It reminds me of, like, I remember I took a theater class very long time ago. And we were doing, like acting falls. And, like, the teacher was like, you kind of have to, like, just go for it. Like, you just got to, like, know that you're going to hit the floor. It may hurt a little bit. But, like, you're not going to, like, hurt yourself. It looks like they all skipped that class. And they were all like, I don't wanna. It's going to hurt. I'm going to just lower myself to the ground.
Yeah, so then we get, I think the titles are there, and then we get Jack and Sam waking up in what sort of looks like sleeping quarters or a med bay. Mm-hmm. And so Jack and Sam come to simultaneously. They're in new clothes. They don't have any of their weapons or gear, including their GDOs.
This is what I had noted for Melanie. I wrote down, jumpsuits! Mel's gonna be so happy. Just because Melanie really likes it when Sam is in her flight suit, and I was like, I wonder if jumpsuits qualify still as...
doesn't quite track as well, but it was still a nice looking jumpsuit.
Yes, they all looked super hot.
The flight suit is way different.
Yeah.
They all looked real good. I mm-hmm. like the way they look in the black sweaters.
So the suits that they wore, I don't know if anybody's ever played Mass Effect, but or like Mass Effect 2, but they're like little suits reminding me of Mass Effect 2 because like they also have suits that kind of look like that. And ah. like the bat, they're like also androids.
Maybe Mass Effect, because I know that came out after Stargate. Maybe Mass Effect took some notes from this episode.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It's completely based in nothing, so don't take my word for that. That's just speculation.
You know, it's a good speculation.
I thought it was interesting. The sweaters have like just a little tiny V right in the, I don't know if you guys noticed that, just right in the neck. It wasn't like an actual V cut. There was just like a little tiny cutout. V. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did like how they were all different though. Like the little lines on their jumpsuits all mm-hmm. were like fitting for all of them. So like each yeah. of the lines made the jumpsuit look better on them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if Harlan did that on purpose. He's like, I think this one will look better on you.
He's very fashion forward.
I mean, he did think they were all specimens.
Yeah, fine specimens.
Yeah. So they Daniel and Teal'c wake up. They both say they're fine. In fact, they kind of act like, oh, I feel great, actually. And nobody ever mentions this the whole episode. Daniel is not wearing his glasses.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Okay, again, I feel like that is one of those rare, like, even though, like, we have dumb audience, this is one of those, like, subtle, get it? They're better. They're different. This is, like, for the smart audience member to be like, hey, something's off.
But that's really, like, the only person you can get away with that with, because, like, there's nothing else physically right. on them that you can tell is different. I don't know. I just...
Right. I feel like that's why they did it.
But nobody said anything about it, though. Like, his glasses just disappeared, and, like, Jack, Sam, and Teal'c said nothing about it.
It's the kind of thing you'd think someone would say something about it. Or at least Daniel would be like, because, I mean, you guys wear glasses. I've worn glasses mm-hmm. enough that I know that you, like, wake up, you immediately, like, reach for your glasses to put them on. And so you'd think Daniel, that would be, like, his instinct, right? Like, he wakes up, he reaches, he's like, oh, where am I? Oh. I don't need my glasses. You'd think that would... Oops, I'm playing a clip. Accidentally.
I was like, I hear something.
I can
like,
definitely I hear Jack right is. Now.
I mean, I appreciate that they didn't like make a huge point of it like they sometimes do, but I did think it was odd that nobody mentioned it.
They could have done like a Spider-Man moment, like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, when after the morning he wakes up, after he gets bitten, he like puts his glasses on and then takes them off, like, yeah. Whoa, I don't need these.
Yeah. Yeah. So then Harlan comes in.
I love Harlan.
He's just saying, come try out over and over again. So
which might be the greatest contribution to Stargate lexicon ever. Okay. On the Twitter for the podcast Twitter, talking to other Stargate people, I love saying come try it as a like hello and goodbye. Like, I love it. I think it's one of the greatest things that's ever been gifted to Stargate. It's great.
It is. It's great. And so Daniel takes over talking to him, assuming that he doesn't speak English. And then, of course, he does. And then Daniel like goes to shake his hand, and Harlan, instead of shaking his hand, just like sticks his hand out. And he's like, oh, this is a custom. And it's great. I love it. It's a great introduction to an alien. It's one of my favorites.
And like, I love Harlan because like he looks so delighted to like partake in all of these customs that he knows about. He's like, I know he's like technically kind of sort of the bad guy, not really, but kind of sort of, but he's such like a lovable character. Like, he's so excitable and weird and quirky and strange and like interesting. And I will take that over standard cutout villain any day.
Yeah, he's great. So he talks about what interesting specimens they are, and we get this great little moment.
You are all such wonderful specimens. You in particular, female.
Colonel.
Easy, Captain.
It's great.
It's a great exchange. I feel like it's kind of a little bit of a wink nod about some of their earlier missteps where he's like, ooh, a female, and she's like ready mm-hmm. to deck him.
She's like that the whole episode too, which is great. Like, her hackles are kind of always up when Harlan's around, kind of mm-hmm. like just enough to where like if she needs to do something about it, she can handle it herself.
Oh, and yeah, the implication that at any moment Jack could be like, go get him, Tiger, and she would just like go ape shit on Harlan is awesome.
Yeah, yeah, no, pretty much just a nod from Jack and she'd be like, oh yeah, no, we're done.
Yeah,
her face though when he starts acting weird about her being a female is mm-hmm. yeah, don't mess with Sam, guys.
No.
And then she looked pretty disappointed that Jack wouldn't let her beat him up.
I also liked, sorry, do it back to the Come Try It thing. I love that Harlan turns to, because he keeps saying Come Try It, Come Try It, and Jack just goes, Kumbaya, or whatever. Yeah,
yeah. it's very Jack. I have a compilation for the end.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Excellent.
So they ask for their weapons and uniforms back, and I was like, but keep these outfits, because they're nice. I like them. Although I understand wanting their weapons back. And we find out that Harlan is the last survivor on this planet. Oh, but before that, there's actually a moment, too, where Harlan touches Sam. Like, he puts his hand on her shoulder, and she is, like, so not down with that.
Which is totally touching. Fair. Like, I don't want random men touching me, either. Like,
especially ones that refer to you as the female specimen. Like,
right? Yeah. And you wake up in different clothes, and you gotta wonder, like, who took me out of my original clothes? Yep. How did I end up in these clothes?
Yep. So then they start walking and talking, going around the area. He talks about how there's trouble in Section 3, how difficult it is to maintain this place by himself. We learn that they are under the surface because the surface became inhabitable with radiation. And so they built this place under the ground. They do have their weapons back now, so apparently, like, they did a little pit stop before their walk and talk to grab their weapons. So basically, Harlan has been alone since Wallace died, which it's unclear, except he talks about how Hubbold was their creator, but then he died too soon before, as they were setting up this underground society, which was, and then we get this clip.
Exactly. 99,207,000 of your hours.
Well, that's 11,000 years.
How did you know that?
That's right.
Yeah.
Wait, how did you know that?
Wait, just keep going all the way around the group.
Yeah. How did we know anything?
I do appreciate that Sam is the first one to be like, how do you know that?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not an easy math problem to do in your head, for sure.
Didn't you do
it? I did the math.
I was going to say, didn't you do it? And you said it wasn't right?
No. It's an estimate. It's rounded down. It's exactly 11,325 years, like, with no remainder. So clearly they, like, picked a number and then multiplied it, because it's kind of random that the number he says of hours would come out to an exact year.
That's fair.
But
right.
It is about 11,000 years, yes. Yeah, so now suddenly they can do math. Very, you know, I mean, I guess not super, it's just arithmetic, but long, difficult arithmetic to do.
So it's still difficult math.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like Sam level math that she would usually do, but
I'd still need a calculator. Yeah,
that's the point. Like, most people can't do those.
No, I was gonna say, well, they're basically machines, so there's probably the calculator function in them right now. That's like, neato, I'll open the calc app.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we already gave that.
Yeah, Melanie.
So then Harlan keeps going on about how he made them better. And Jack's like, the hell does that mean? And is not getting a satisfactory answer.
No.
So my question is, so he made Daniel better. Daniel can see better. He made Teal'c better by taking out his symbiote. He made Jack better by making his body feel younger, I assume. How did he make Sam better?
Can't make Sam better. Come on now.
I mean, I know that, but I was just wondering.
Isn't she stronger?
Oh, that could be it.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're all stronger.
She's a little stronger.
I mean, yeah. They're all stronger. But, like, I was just saying, like, major points of...
This isn't, like, upgrades level.
Right.
There's no armbands. And there's...
Yeah. That's a whole other episode. Thing. Yeah.
Jess will get there eventually.
All right. So Jack is sufficiently freaked out by being made better and not getting good answers out of Harlan that he just pulls the plug. They're bouncing. Yeah. So they go back to the Stargate. They go back to the
I wrote SG-1 bounces too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Harlan is frantically trying to convince them to say, you can't go.
Yeah.
And he seems genuinely concerned. And then he has kind of a Piglet from Winnie the Pooh moment where he's like, oh dear. Kind of made me giggle. But so they leave, disregarding his warnings.
Yeah. But doesn't he say, like, you'll be back?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Which is a little ominous.
It is a little ominous. He doesn't say it threateningly, though.
No.
He says it very matter-of-factly and kind of scared.
Yeah.
So then the next scene is in the infirmary. And the thing I love about this scene is that Jack's like, I feel great. And Janet very nonchalantly is like, well, I have a concern. It's like, take a listen. The dude doesn't have a heartbeat. I get it that he's like talking and conversing with her. So she clearly thinks that he's not like about to die. But
right.
The fact that she's so nonchalant about like, yeah, you don't have a heartbeat. That's not good. It's a problem.
To me, this is an example of an episode where I don't think that I'm not going to like speak on the intent of the writer's behalf or anything, but I feel like the writer didn't have a good grasp on Janet, which I think is like a potential problem when you're working with a rotating board of script writers and you've got a recurring cast, and Janet felt all over the place to me. So she's like nonchalant about the no heartbeat thing. She gets a little weirdly freaked out and leaps to the like all systems red, blue button where it's like alarms are going off. And then she's like, fuck SG-1. That's not put them up. They're gold. We got to kill them. Like, obviously that's not what she's actually saying, but like, she's just like all over the place this episode. This is not my favorite Janet episode.
Yeah, no, it is. You're right. It's kind of a roller coaster with her because right here, she's like, no, no big deal. You don't have a heartbeat. We're just going to try and draw some blood, which.
And she, doesn't she give the stethoscope to Jack?
She gives the stethoscope to Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, take a little look-see here. It's like, aren't you the doctor?
And then Jack's kind of like, I don't hear anything. Why is it not working?
Yeah.
Doesn't he say like, this is better? I'm dead.
Yes. Yes, he does.
It's one of the better Jack lines.
They really should have known that it was Jack's consciousness in there. It is 100% Jack.
Yeah.
So then she's like, well, I just want to draw some blood, which again, I'm not a doctor. If my patient doesn't have a heartbeat, I think I'm going for the x-ray before the blood draw. I don't know. Maybe I don't know.
Okay, now again, I don't know much of the medical field at all. I don't know. But, like, if you don't have a heartbeat, can you even draw blood at all? Is that even possible?
Well, like the way, pumping and circulating blood, so.
That's my point. I'm like, is that even a thing?
There's no arterial pressure because there's no arterial pumping happening, so.
Right. So, I love, though, that, so then she goes to draw blood, and she, like, gets the stick on the first try, and I'm like, how much, like, a vein did that tube feel? Although mm-hmm. she didn't really see her palpating the vein, but so then she sticks him and comes out with this like milky fluid.
Guys,
it was me last time.
I'm just looking at all of you right now, like, okay. Are we going down this road again?
I have to tell you guys on the podcast, like you listeners out there, Chelsea brought up the thing.
She said the phrase, but she just said milky fluid.
And then Chelsea and I agree that it looked like semen, okay?
And I was horrified at the implications. Who's semen? Why is there semen? Why do they have to have semen? They're androids.
Clearly it's not semen, but it looks like it.
There was potentially discussion about, like, fingers and fluid escaping fingers.
Was there?
I don't remember.
I just remember saying it goes squirting into the tube very suggestively.
Squirting, yeah. Yes, the semen-y fluid. Yeah. Anyways.
We're going to just blow past that.
Blow, really.
Yep.
We're going to blow past the creamy fluid.
And creamy, now milky we're fluid. On to the next.
It's not blood, is the thing.
It's not blood. And potentially semen.
So the team starts to panic a little bit now.
Just to say.
It's yes. Lubrication fluid.
That's what?
Yes.
Is that better?
Sure.
No, it's not. So the team is starting to panic now, and Janet has almost like a Michael Scott from The Office moment of like, everybody calm the F down! She's like, calm down! It's like, Janet, you need to maybe calm down a little bit too.
Yes.
Well, and then Janet says calm down and loses it. Like, it's all yes. very strange.
Yeah.
So then everyone's
and while she's calming down and losing it,
yeah. Jack fucking cuts himself.
Jack stabs himself aggressively and then like very slowly, painstakingly drags that scalpel up his forearm, and the noises that they put into that scene are very upsetting and unpleasant. And oh, also Teal'c at this moment just now realizes he doesn't have a symbiote,
which is
as Jack is slicing himself
you would
open.
Think that they would see that he would notice beforehand. Like, I yeah. found that interesting that he just now noticed that he didn't have a symbiote.
He mm-hmm. does mention later that he can still feel the presence of the symbiote, so maybe that's why he didn't notice, but I'm still gonna say you maybe should have noticed it sooner. But yeah, so Jack cuts his arm open and then rips the flesh apart, and inside mm-hmm. his arm there are all these mechanical robotic components. Which I actually thought, props to the practical effects department, looked really cool and convincing.
Yeah. I agree. Sorry, I was going to say, it's a pretty hardcore move for Jack to leap from, like, no, I mean, I guess, like, what's the worst that could happen? You have no heartbeat, semen's coming out of your arm. I guess you're just going to, like, hope for the best, and you're just going to go all in, scalpel to the arm, and just... get in
I
there.
Mean, it's kind look, of a Jack reaction. He goes with his gut.
I mean, yeah. and you're also in a medical base, so I think you'll be okay if you just decide to, you know, I'm sure that...
Yeah. Get in there.
Well, plus after the initial stab, he wasn't bleeding, so...
That's fair.
Yeah, and he clearly wasn't in pain because he has no nerve endings or whatever, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Sam goes over to help Jack with his arm. It was...
Boy, does she ever.
Yeah, so she's like grabbing his arm. There are, of course, like, shippy implications to that, but there was a part of me that was, like, felt like there was some mixture for Sam of concern and also curiosity when she's going over to look at Jack's arm. I think, ultimately, the concern was the bigger player there, but I don't know. If it were me, I would definitely be curious. I'd want to see what's inside there, especially with the implication that the same things that are in his arm are also in your arm.
I just think it's hilarious that she's bandaging his arm. Mm-hmm. Like, what? There's no blood coming out. There's
fixing
no concern
the cut.
Here.
It's fine. It's cosmetics. She's just trying to make it look better. It's, uh-huh. it's cool. You uh-huh. know what? They're touching each other. Why are you complaining?
Boy, they sure are touching each other. I know. Yeah. Concern and curiosity. But also, they are snuggled up on that little cot there. And she is, like, hovering over him. A lot of touching. It's just very important that during that scene, you just look past Janet's shoulder
and
look at and Daniel and Jack and Sam are on that cot doing their own thing back there.
Yeah. And she doesn't let go of his arm for the rest of the scene.
Nope. And it won't be the first time. I mean, it won't be the last time that she fixes him up and bandages him and touches him this episode.
Oh, I was like, where are you going with this?
So Janet's reaction is to then call for security. So mm-hmm. she like smashes the button and won't let Daniel come near her. Who Daniel's trying to reassure her. And so then the SFs come bursting into the infirmary and Jack orders them to stand down. And Janet's like, nope, belay that order. I'm in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hammond comes in and we get a for crying out loud. A great moment for Jack. With
mm-hmm.
Sam is still holding his arm.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know, needs to be said.
Uh-huh. It's a long scene and there's a lot of holding.
And so Hammond comes in and Jack tries to convince him that he's Jack and that they don't need to be scared of him. And we get this great exchange between Jack and Hammond.
I don't know what that son of a bitch on 989
follow
did to
the
us,
instructions
but I swear to God, your wife died of cancer four
and you
years
will
ago.
Not be hurt.
Your granddaughter's names are Tessa and Kayla.
Any resistance by any of you will be met with deadly force. Is that understood?
So in those 13 seconds, we get more exposition on General Hammond's character than we have in the previous 19 episodes. And in the rest of the series.
Yep.
His wife died 4 years ago of cancer. That's so sad. Yeah. His granddaughters.
Fuck cancer, man.
Yeah. His granddaughters are named after Brad Wright's daughters. So.
Good to know.
Fun fact.
How did you know that? Is that like
how did I know that?
Yeah.
It was on the wiki.
Oh, okay. I was just curious. I was just like, is there a random piece of information to know?
I love these kinds of exchanges. Like, I think I said this last time, but literally one of my absolute favorite tropes of all time in any kind of, like, written media, I mean, any kind of TV show or, like, fanfic or whatever, is when, like, character A has to prove that they are who they are by telling character B all the mundane facts that they know about that person, like, that only they could know. Now, normally, it's in a romantic context for me because I love it, but this works just as well. Like, I love hearing, like, characters rattle off those kinds of, like, in the episode of the show called Pitch, there's a character who's like, well, did you know that she, like, sings Katy Perry's Firework off key when she stretches, and she hates grape soda, and she, like, all that shit. I love that shit so much. It is my weakness.
Yes, I think in kind of, it's kind of like the great ending of When Harry Met Sally too, when he lists all of her little quirks.
Yes, that's absolutely, yeah.
Same thing.
So writers, keep doing that, because I love it.
I think Jess maybe just hinted at a Jack Hammond ship.
No, no, she didn't.
No, not even, like,
I wonder if that exists.
Oh, it has 34, man, rule 34.
There has to be at least one.
Hammond.
At least
SG1.
One.
Fick.
This is for science, everyone? This is for science. At least, it has to be on a live journal. It has to be somewhere. I refuse to believe this doesn't exist.
Guys.
Does it exist? Is it on live journal? Was that right?
It's on fanfiction.net. Oh,
it's another arcane.
Yes. Let's just say that the words general's pet has been
used. Oh, God.
Guys, I gotta get off.
Yeah, stop. What are you doing?
We're
stop
trying,
that.
We
gotta keep going. All right, keep going.
So
keep going.
They send SG-1 to a holding cell where they're being observed by Janet and Hammond. Hammond seems pretty convinced. They're like, hey, that certainly seems like SG-1. Janet is a lot more cautious. She thinks it might be a Gwoll trick, considers it dangerous to keep them there in the SGC, which... maybe an overreaction, but also based on what we've seen the Gwoll do in the past when they've infiltrated, it does seem like the right idea in terms of, so when we had Kowalski come back as a Gwoll, he wanted access to the gate, and the nearness to the gate almost made Cassie explode because they wanted to blow up the SGC. So basically, when the Gwoll are doing this shit, it's usually an attack on the SGC. So Janet's idea to maybe get them out of the SGC isn't, I get it, but she does seem to go there pretty quickly when there's no evidence of Gwoll intervention.
That's the thing that kills me the most, is that, like, I don't mind the leap that, like, maybe we should be more cautious here, but it's also, like, there's been no evidence of the Gwoll or involved in any kind of capacity. There's other, we've run into other villainy people up until this point, and, like, also, I guess it's still season one, but this, like, plays into a larger part later in the series when, like, weird shit happens to SG-1. And it's bizarre to me. It's like that arbitrary of, like, Jack deciding when something is too dangerous to stay or leave. It's arbitrary to me when it's like, oh, we should believe SG-1 versus, no, we can't trust SG-1. It just feels like I wish there was, like, a protocol SOP or something for the SGC to go through to be like, are any of these signs present? Okay, no, we should trust them a little bit, like, give them some leeway.
Yeah. I mean, they are in pretty uncharted territory here. They are machines. Like, we have verified that. So,
yes.
They aren't themselves, for sure, even if they are acting that way.
Right.
So, then we go to the holding cell, and I love how Daniel is just completely nonplussed. Just...
Yeah.
Confronting his own ideas of reality and identity. And it just...
Daniel and Sam both, like, roll with these particular punches very quickly.
They're both just like, well, this is a really cool thought experiment made real.
Yeah.
And...
like, doesn't Sam say, like, we're robots of the conscience, basically?
Yeah. Well, and so, and then Sam is defending Hammond's decision to confine them. And Daniel is going, talking about, like, the concept of, are we us? Like, I feel like me. I remember everything that I remembered before. I have all the same, like, thoughts and ideas. You know, so I think that makes me me. And Sam is the same way. She's like, I know who I am. Like, I know I'm me.
Didn't she just jump to the fact that they might have, like, moved their consciousnesses over to, like, these robot bodies? Like, it was a complete leap.
What are the other options?
I don't know, but it was just...
I just feel like if you wake up and you're a fucking robot, there should be, like, some... It's like the first thing she says, like, don't you see? We're robots. And they've, and like, but our consciousness is like ourselves, but like, we're robots. It's just like, I mean, you're not wrong. That is what happens. And I understand you have to say that to move the narrative along. But I just, but then it like, doesn't that open up like philosophical, like to Daniel's point, it's like, okay, but like, what is our conscience? Like what is that? Like, what does it mean then to be you versus a robot versus, like, I don't know. It just felt like she jumped there and then glossed over
She's
it.
She's Fox Mulder. She always immediately jumps to the conclusions. It's like she's the science version of Fox Mulder.
And nobody else believes her until, like, the very, very end. It's fine.
Yeah. So then Daniel checks in on Teal'c, who seems a little... I mean, it's hard to tell, but yeah, a little shell-shocked. And he says that he still feels Junior's presence, like a phantom limb pain, Daniel suggests. And so that, but then Jack is just pissed at, like, how Daniel and Sam don't, are just not upset enough. I think it's fair. They should be more upset. This is a very concerning situation.
Yeah, Jack is very pissed.
Yeah, so he kind of goes off on them.
You really think military intelligence is going to let us continue as SG-1 like this?
We still have our rights, Jack.
What rights are you talking about?
Colonel, no matter what he's done to us, we're still...
human? Is that what you were going to say?
This is almost a callback. I feel like it's almost a callback to... Enigma? Is that the one? Where they talk about basic human rights?
The rights, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so now they're having to face the same things that they're having to face. And Jack's just kind of like, we don't have any rights because we're not human beings.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that that Daniel and Sam are kind of wanting to think positively in this situation because Jack's right. Like, they have no rights, that things can go very badly for them. And then we get Sam saying that now we know why Harlan knew they'd be back, which I guess could maybe be part of it, but wasn't actually why Harlan knew they'd be back.
No. But also.
Yeah.
I really wish, and I roll, it gets progressively, like, more obvious throughout the episode. I really wish we got a better grasp on why Jack, like, why the writer decided to make Jack the person who reacted this way. Like, I think it's right to have a character react this way. Like, you've got four characters, so it makes sense that you're dealing with, like, maybe two people from a science perspective and then two people from... a more humanist perspective, but I would love to know, like, why Jack is so affected by this.
I think that it's because Jack is the one who's looking at the kind of military consequences of it and knowing that they're just going to be locked up and experimented on. Like, they have no rights. Yeah. There's nothing in the Geneva Convention to cover this. Like,
yeah.
So I think not only is he upset about what it means for him personally, but he's also able to see this is not going to end well for us.
The big picture.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they're, after the SG-1 team kind of talks it over and they've gone through their existential crisis, Hammond comes back in and basically tells him he wants to send SG-5 back to Altair to try and figure out what the hell happened. And SG-1 basically protests, says, no, we got to go back, and then collapses in the cell. A much better collapse than our original opening collapse.
It still wasn't super convincing.
It wasn't great. But so SG-1 collapses, and Hammond kind of looks just very conflicted, very confused about what to do. And he's holding his team and is basically like, okay, we got to send him through. So they send back SG-1 robots through to Altair, which was very gracious of Hammond, because he could have said no. He could have kept them. This could have been like a gut call, and he could have blown up the SGC by accident. So the SG-1, should we call them SG-1 robots? The SG-1 androids? The
Robo SG-1
shows back up to Altair, and essentially Sam explains it as their battery died, or was dying, away from Altair. And that was why Harlan knew that they'd be back, because they already felt better just showing back up through the gate. And Robo SG-1 kind of has a small interaction. I don't remember what happens when they're at the gate.
Harlan comes other back than... and Jack tries to kill him.
Yes, Harlan comes back and says, told you so, I knew you'd be back. And Jack loses his shit, grabs him by his lapels of his very fashionable robe, throws him up against the gate, and is like, the hell did you do to us, you sick son of a bitch? And I'm paraphrasing. And Harlan explains that SG-1's original bodies are completely gone, there's no way back, and that SG-1 is stuck essentially as robots. This is their new reality.
Yeah.
So get used to it.
I do think it's interesting. So Harlan says, when Jack has him pinned against the Stargate, he says, you are damaging me. Which,
yes,
instead of you're hurting me. I thought it was just a great little touch to add, to point out that he's a robot.
I also love that Harlan's kind of like not laughing throughout this, but even terrified or like delivering this bad news, he has this like musical lyrical quality to his voice, and it just sounds like he's delighted still, which I just find, again, very interesting and very intriguing.
Yeah.
So basically, after delivering this horrible news, Harlan essentially tucks SG-1 back to bed. They go back to whatever that med sleeping pod quarters that we originally saw them in, and says, you have to recharge your batteries, basically, because he needs Robo SG-1 to help maintain this giant facility. So Harlan goes off to work on maintenance and leaves Robo SG-1. And we get another, like, it's almost like a good, like, sandwich back-to-back SG-1, like, talking about their new existence scene. And Jack kind of, like, jumps to suicide, essentially. Like, I'm pretty sure he's like, you know, what's the point? Like,
yeah.
This isn't any kind of life.
Yeah. I have some of that. I don't know what I pulled. Let's see.
I say let the place fall down.
To condemn Harlan would be to condemn ourselves.
Your point being?
What is done is done.
Oh, please. Has it occurred to anyone that all we are now is robots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of an intense leap.
Yeah.
Because you're not just condemning Jack, he's condemning all of SG-1.
Yeah, well, he's basically saying their life is pointless and meaningless now.
So Jack kind of stalks off. He's, like, upset, and he's like, I'm gonna go find Harlan and talk to him. Like, there's gotta be something. Which leaves Daniel and Sam and Tilk behind. Daniel and Sam start having this conversation where they're kind of rationalizing their existence. Like, and Chelsea and Mel, y'all have to help me out. It's been a while since I watched the episode. I don't remember exactly what they say, but they basically say, like, so this is, we're still us. Uh-huh. We're
just a new, we're going to be fine. A new body, basically. Like,
yeah.
So first, Daniel is having a moment of thinking, like, 11,000 years, we could live that long now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, which is
terrifying.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
But so basically Daniel argues that their normal bodies are a machine, functionally, that houses your consciousness, and now they just have a different machine. And Sam kind of agrees, like, yeah, we used to have organic bodies, but now we have mechanical bodies, but it's still functionally. As she says, they have the same sensations and perceptions.
Yeah. Honestly, it doesn't feel like Sam to me in that moment. Like, I feel like she would have a little bit more of a reaction about being a robot, rather than just being like, it's totally cool.
It's like too science-y.
Yeah. That yeah, is they're both almost too sciencey for this episode.
Well, I mean, Daniel is really taking a philosophical tack to dealing with it. But I mean, I agree that it is odd that neither of them seem overly upset about it at any point during the episode. Yeah. Like, I understand their points. I get where they're coming from in terms of feeling like themselves, but it's still a pretty bonkers thing that's happened to them.
It feels like, so I was going to read out of the Illustrated Companion. I won't. But basically, the Illustrated Companion, they talk about how the Tin Man, this episode, was them going for an all-out comedy. Like, huh. The intent of this episode, really? I'll just read it. I said I wasn't going to, but I'm going to. Because it's, I'm going to link it back to where I'm going with this in my head. The episode has a big place in my heart because it was the first time we'd gone for out-and-out comedy, Brad Wright adds. Before Tin Man, we were allowing the humor to come through, but within a serious story. This was the first time we let a guest character be balls out funny. Sorry, clearly a fan of the actor, Wright grins. Jay Brazeau is a local Vancouver actor, and I wrote Harlan for him. That was why there were all those funny little moments, like when he'd say, "You're different." I knew exactly how he'd deliver that. So, they intentionally went for an all, he says, out-and-out comedy.
I didn't take this episode as a comedy.
Nope.
Like, I didn't either. Well, Harlan is funny, like, yes, and he definitely plays it, those beats to be funny, but the content of the episode is pretty real. And
to kind of go back with that, so Brad Wright also says, as they were flying back to LA, they had to solve a problem because the story had evolved where Jeff King, the writer, wanted to turn the team into robots, but we didn't know how to end it. So Brad Wright came up with the idea that they find their bodies, and this whole notion that we were trying to solve through the episode was, how do we get back into our bodies? That's what an audience is going to ask. Now Harlan says it's impossible, but the reason for that is because the bodies are occupied. The brainstorm I had was that SG-1 hadn't been transferred into the robots, they had been copied. I thought it was really cool that they weren't even following our characters to the episode, but 100% copies of them instead. So, my thought is, this episode for me struggles with, like, if you're gonna bring up the idea of, like, what does it mean to be human in ourselves, man, a comedy episode is not the way to do it. And if you are gonna go comedy, this isn't the way to do it. Because I feel like none of the characters hit, maybe with the exception of Jack, none of the characters hit on this, like, crisis of, who are we? What are we? What does this mean for us? What, I'm a robot, but I feel human. I'm still myself. Like, none of that really gets touched on. And I think that's, like, what loses it for me in these, like, group discussions. Like, no one, I feel like there's nothing being new said in the world of sci-fi, because this is a pretty, like, tried and true trope in the genre. And I don't know if, I mean, the copies thing and, like, following a copy of our team, that's cool. But, like, you did it through the lens of, like, what does it mean to be human? Mm-hmm. Anyways, rant aside, so we leave Daniel and Sam philosophizing and rationalizing their existence in their bunk, and Tilk kind of, like, I don't remember if he, like, gives an excuse for leaving. He kind of just, like, walks out. Mm-hmm. And he does not look well, and he essentially has this, like, robot seizure. Like, mm-hmm. He's, like, flickering and, like, doubled over, and he's not looking like himself, and something is clearly very wrong with Teal'c.
Yep.
So we kind of, this is our middle part of our episode, so we're kind of setting up the climax. Jack is talking to Harlan, and he wants to know, why are they here? What's going on? What do you mean there is no way back? And Harlan explains that his race was facing destruction, and they essentially cloned and made robots of themselves. And they kind of wandered out into the universe, but his people never returned. And some of them essentially committed suicide. They walked outside and away from the power source, and they dwindled, leaving just Harlan and, what's his face? Wallace.
Wallace, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is totally fair. Then, they all, a good chunk of them committed suicide because, I mean, I would not want to have my consciousness forever in a robot and want to therefore live forever. That sounds completely 100% off.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that you said they started with 1,000 people, because to me that means that they had to, like, pick the people who got to be cloned and put mm-hmm. into robots and go underground. And that would be a very interesting story.
Yeah. Hunger Games.
I would hope it was something like a lottery.
Or maybe, 1,000 people was their entire village, like, you
never maybe
know.
That's all that was left
from the radiation and whatnot. I also really appreciate that, like, we're getting enough backstory to justify the existence of this power plant and these people and these robots, but, like, it's not that in depth. You don't have to think about it too hard. It's like, oh yeah, okay, cool, their people were dying, this was their amazing science solution. Mm-hmm. Got it. Harlan tells us that the battery life for them is about 4 hours, give or take. You'll start feeling unwanted side effects after 4 hours.
So then my question becomes, like, does that, assuming the little ball thing is the thing that keeps them charged or whatever, I guess it mm-hmm. only has, like, a certain radius. So, like, if you're too far away from it in this big old warehouse, you don't charge, I guess. So it's not like Wi-Fi where...
I think pretty much everywhere in the underground facility is...
You're good.
Is covered by the power source.
Well, then, why would they have to recharge every 4 hours then?
They don't. He was just talking about when they...
If you leave.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes more sense.
Which, it's crazy to me that no one thought about, like, creating, like, a portable power source.
No, they did. They talked about it.
But it was it wasn't, like, a permanent solution.
Yeah, it wasn't a permanent.
It was, like, an extending their...
It's like a battery pack for our phones.
Yeah. Exactly. That is exactly what it's like.
Look, I'm just trying to help these young kids.
If they were
know what we're talking about.
They were Nokias, they would last a lot longer.
Just no one knows what a Nokia is, okay?
No, look, first of all, the people listening to this podcast definitely know what a Nokia is.
No, I'll listen.
This fandom is 25 years old.
I guarantee you there are some youngins out there.
Anyhoozles. So while Jack and Harlan are talking, this warning sign goes off. Oh, backtracking. Harlan also seems to, like, imply earlier that he knows that Teal'c isn't going to survive. There's a lot of, like, don't worry about Teal'c. He's imperfect. He's different, which is some coded shit.
Yeah.
It's like,
I don't love the only black character being described that way.
Yeah. No, same. Like, man, of all the reasons, I get why he's the Jaffa. I get it. But, like, woof. This is, like, that one episode, I don't remember which one it was, and I was like, I'm pretty sure there's some, like, racist coding in this episode. I'm not sure, but I feel like
it's the late 90s. We didn't have to be politically correct yet.
Well,
it's politically correct. It's just,
like, Teal'c is different than the rest of them. That's fine. I just thought it was weird none of the team was standing up for him.
Yes.
Like, Teal'c's different, and they were like, just keep talking.
Jack kind of, like, picked up on it. And
the third time,
like,
he says it, Jack calls him on it.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm with you, Chels. I really wish that the team was more, like, teamy and being like, the fuck you mean Teal'c's different? What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah.
Anywho, so the warning goes off in this big power plant, basically. And Harlan gives this kind of, like, mumbo-jumbo-y, science-y, fake sci-fi, like, explanation that the coolant is malfunctioning and the power source is going to, like, overheat, basically, and... I kind of was zoning out in this section, but basically they got to go fix some vents to cool the system so the power source can keep powering them.
Right? So they don't die. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's essentially it, but that was, like, very dramatic and extended over the course of, like, 8 minutes, and I checked my phone multiple times. So, Harlan and Sam and Daniel join them, and Harlan basically tells them, this is why I need you guys. I can't run to all these different vent sources to open up this coolant thing, and I need you guys to go and do this. So Harlan kind of gives orders to Robo SG-1 to go fix what's broken. And Jack says, you know, where is Teal'c? And Harlan says, it does not matter. And Jack very clearly does not like that. And he kind of glares at Harlan and he won't leave to go open his vent. And Harlan, there's just, like, kind of, like, tense standoff. So now we've got this, like, extra storyline of, like, no, but, like, what's going on with Teal'c? So eventually Jack does leave because the alarms are going off and Harlan looks panicked and he leaves. And SG-1 disperses to go open these vents to go cool the battery. And then Melanie's going to take it from here.
The main part I remember after this is that Jack comes up to, like, this, like, landing, and he decides to, like, hop over the landing, or, like, he looks over and he's like, should I do this? are my knees going to be able to handle this? And he does it anyway, and he just lands like it's nobody's, like, it's not a problem at all for anyone.
He hops over that thing, and it's like a superhero landing.
When it should have broken like a leg, the superhero. At least.
His very fragile leg.
Yeah, right. and then he goes towards his vent, and then we segue to Sam and Daniel, who are also at a vent, working together. They're trying to figure out how to get the little vent thing off. And Daniel was like, hey, look, I can pull this thing off. It's not a problem. Which is kind of funny, because Daniel shouldn't be able to do that.
None of them should be able to do that.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, Teal'c might be able to do that.
Yeah. Teal'c can do anything.
he
can!
So they fix... Daniel and Sam fix their vent. And then we segue back to Jack, who is trying to get his vent open... I think.
Yeah.
By sticking his head in
it. Right, okay, cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he sticks his head in the vent.
He's using his noggin. It's a joke.
And he hears, yeah, he hears the thing, the overhead, the announcer, that's what I'm going to call him, the announcer and the overcomms thing, telling them that they're going to let the pressure out. Jack's like, Harlan, I'm not ready yet. Like, you can't do that because I'm going to get sprayed with steam because I haven't, you know, opened the valve yet. Well, Harlan does it anyway, and Jack gets sprayed with steam and then falls backwards. And then Robo-Teal'c shows up and looks pissed. And Jack gets up and is like, hey, Teal'c, what's up, man? And Teal'c, like, destroys Jack.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
he kicks the shit out of Jack.
He beat the absolute shit out of him. So the steam's still coming out of the pipe. And Teal'c puts Jack's face over the steam, like, and gets, like, increasingly closer to the opening. Now, this is what I wanted to bring up earlier when you said that they don't have any nerve endings, so they shouldn't feel any pain. So if they don't have any nerve endings, and there wasn't a problem when he sliced open his arm... Why all of a sudden is he in pain when his face is getting pushed into the steam?
I don't think it's pain. I think he's just pissed off and, like, it may be just uncomfortable because it's, like, your face, but, like, it's still hot steam melting off his fake skin layer. That can't feel great.
But he's not, maybe but it's he not, like, can't feel it.
But maybe it's not nerve endings in the sense that it's pain, but, like, you know, like, when you, like, bite your nails or, like, and you, like, tug on, well, maybe you don't bite your nails, but if you're biting your nails and you, like, get some skin by accident or whatever, that's, like, a little, like, of pain, but you're, like, you don't feel it, but you're just, like, oh, yeah, that happened. Like, skin peels. It happens.
Okay.
Or, it's a writing inconsistency.
Which is fine.
Or it did hurt when he cut his arm open earlier and he's just that badass.
I mean, that's fair, too. I thought it was interesting that it didn't hurt, and then all of a sudden it hurt, and...
Yeah.
But then, Daniel and Sam come, and kind of are like, hey, Teal'c, what are you doing? And then, Harlan shows up, and Harlan shoots him with what looks like a...
Taser?
Thank you! A taser. And, it makes him, like, disintegrate.
Yeah.
With, like,
he killed
shot.
Him, man.
Yeah, he just kills Teal'c. Like, it's no problem. And no one else really seemed too upset about it.
No! Either. No one reacts!
Just, like, complete, like, hello?
Well, no, there's not an immediate reaction. Then they, like, Sam is focused on Jack and his face.
As he's... That's fair. Okay.
But then there's a moment where Daniel's like, you killed him! And he's like, I didn't kill him.
That's very vague.
I can fix it. I can bring him back or whatever.
It was, like, an odd scene. Because, like, if we're supposed... Because, like, we know they're robots. We don't know that there's actually the real SG-1 around. So, like, by all intents and purposes, like, we just killed Teal'c.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I remember when I watched this the first time and I was texting Travis through it and I was, like, very confused. I was, like, how are they going to get back in their bodies? What do you mean they're robots? Like, what in the actual hell is happening right now? And then I was like, and they just killed Teal'c, so, like, what is happening? And then you find out that that's not exactly what happens. But yes, you're right. Harlan says that he can fix it, and he, like, runs away to his little lair, and,
Sam attends to Jack.
Go ahead. You can talk about it.
My only thing, there's a lot of face touching in this particular scene. A lot of very gentle fingertips, tilting his head this way and that to inspect him for damage. And it's important that we all take a moment and think about that. That's all.
Thank you, Jess, for your Sam.
Her hands look very nice on his face.
Yes. Thank you, Chelsea. That's where I'm getting at.
Thank you.
And her hands would look nice on other parts of his body is all I'm saying as well.
So thank you, Chelsea and Jess, for your input on the Sam and Jack moment. Very much appreciated.
This is the Sam Jack corner. Please visit anytime.
I'm also in that corner, but Jess just seems to get way more excited about it.
It's because I'm not married.
Sam and Daniel go and find... Where does Jack go? Does he just stay there?
Jack?
He just lingers a little bit.
Okay, so Sam and Daniel go...
He's putting his face back on.
That's fair. So Sam and Daniel go and find Harlan. Which I thought was kind of cool because the door was shut. And they just both kind of like lifted it.
Yep.
Like
super strength.
Yeah, super strength. It's awesome.
It's also a very Wizard of Oz moment. Because he's like, don't come in here! Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Literally lifting the curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he's like, you have to leave. You can't be here. You have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Then he makes this, like, vague comment about how he won't make the same mistake again when he makes Teal'c again. Which is very strange, because if their bodies are gone, how are you making a new template?
And then...
And then, Sam, you know, kind of argues with him and, like, wants all these answers. And, Harlan won't give her any, and then Jack shows up, and like in a boomingly loud voice, like is like, I don't remember what he says.
He tells him to shut it down.
Yeah,
the Teal'c synthetic bot creation thing.
Okay.
Yeah, are we talking about the weird synthetic sticky substance all over Teal'c? No. Or whose job it was to, like, rub Vaseline all over.
And I thought it was KY, and y'all were like...
Yes. I thought it was probably, like, Vaseline.
Yes. Which can work as a KY alternative. We've all been there.
I haven't.
Have we not?
Jess is alone.
Jess has been there.
What? So Teal'c is covered in some weird shit, and Jack walks in. Yep.
Hey. Harlan does mention that the reason that Teal'c malfunctioned before is because he wasn't prepared for the fact that there were two minds in him. But now he's going to fix that, and he can compensate for the one mind.
I wonder if, like, we're supposed to interpret Robo Teal'c going crazy as the fighting of the two minds causing the malfunction, or if, like, the symbiote took control of Teal'c in that moment, and that was, like, the symbiote.
I took it as that was a symbiote, and not, like, Teal'c. It was a symbiote being Teal'c.
That's what I thought.
Oh, got it. I thought he was just malfunctioning because, like, the two minds couldn't compete together, so, like, everything was falling apart. Not necessarily... because the symbiote was in charge, but that totally makes sense.
I think it can be read either way.
Either way.
Agreed.
It's not critical to the episode. Carry on.
Jack tells Harlan to give Sam all the answers that she wants, basically, and then they find out that their bodies actually exist.
Yes.
But they can't go back
in their bodies. Which, again, I was confused, because I thought that their bodies had to be there forever in order for their consciousness to work, when I first watched this initially. And so then I was like, well, how the fuck are they supposed to go back to Earth if they can't get back in the fucking body? And then they woke up. So.
Yeah.
It was quickly resolved, but my point is that I was freaked out for like 0.5 seconds. For no apparent reason. But how wild is that to know that, that you're a copy of somebody else. Like, you think that you're somebody, and then you find out that you're really a copy instead of the real thing. I mean, they knew they weren't the real thing, if that makes sense.
Right.
But they thought that they were the real, as real as it could be, because the bodies were gone.
Right. You get them all in the room, like, with their bodies, and again, I feel like everyone takes it pretty chilly, except for Jack. Mm-hmm. Who just looks like his whole world has, like, come crashing down around him, and he has to just, like, leave the room.
Yeah. Which is an appropriate response. It's just odd that he's the only one having it.
Yes! Yeah. Fuck it. Okay.
Like, both Sams are like, yeah, we're gonna nerd out together. Like, it's, that's cool. I mean, I was okay with it. That's totally fine with me. But, I mean.
Little threesome thing. Shut up. We were all thinking them. Did you pull the clip of them talking about their moles?
Yeah.
Recreating the neural structure on a molecular level defies the uncertainty principle. But we are identical. Right down to the mole on our...
Hey, shut up.
Your mole on your where? I need to know.
Can we also talk about how bad that green screen was?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, yes.
It's bad.
Oh, speaking of... The old illustrated companion strikes again.
Because she almost looked like she was, like, 2D, like, two-dimensional.
Yeah. It looked very two-dimensional, and it was very clear that they weren't talking to each other, actually.
So, Michael Greenberg says, production-wise, the episode was quite difficult because we were shooting in an old abandoned power station that was tricky to light and work in. On top of that, we were doing a lot of twinning shots, which involved split screens, motion control, and tracking shots. It certainly was one of those episodes that really tests your filmmaking abilities. Which, maybe for the 90s, he did a great job. And then he said that Rick really enjoyed the challenge of predicting his own rhythms and imagining what it was like to respond to himself. Don't forget, he would do one side, then the camera was blocked off, and he would change costume and go do the other side. There were hours and hours in between, but he had to respond as if it had just happened.
See, I could see RDA being really good at that.
Yeah. I think, well, and so after they, SG-1 is, like, in their sleeping quarters talking to the other SG-1, we get that Jack-to-Jack exchange, and, like, it reads really well. Like, the RDA talking to himself as the two Jacks is pretty perfect. Mm-hmm.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And so everybody else is talking to themselves. Jack slips away to go find Robo-Jack. And Robo-Jack looks like he's having an existential crisis. Because he probably is.
He is. Fair.
Yep.
And he's just kind of like, you know, what about me? Like, you know, I have all these memories and all these, you know, things that I want to do. And now, you know, I don't have the ability to do them because they're... your dreams and your, you know, memories and things like that. And then Jack, being all military, and worried about intel being leaked because they have, you know, the same memories. Like, he knows everything Jack knows, which I'm sure Jack knows a lot.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting thing that they just decided to let them stay around. Like, the robots, like, I realize that the Goa'uld aren't there on that planet. But, like, what if the Goa'uld did find them? And then...
Well, mm-hmm. Robo-Jack promises to bury the gate.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which they don't do.
Nope, they don't. Do not.
Because we meet up with Robo SG-1 later.
Yeah. No, they don't bury the gate. I mean, I would also assume that they'd still go back and change all their gate codes and stuff.
Yeah. And their GDOs and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't blame Robo-Jack for not burying the gate. I think it maybe was risky, but what are your options to be stuck on that planet for literally ever?
It's not even a planet, it's a warehouse.
Yeah, yeah. It's a warehouse that you can't go outside because there's radiation and you're going to die, I guess. I don't know. But, well, I guess you're a robot, so does radiation, it doesn't matter. So, it just, I don't blame Jack for not doing it.
Did you pull their conversation? By chance,
Wait, I pulled part of it. Oh no, I didn't. Oh yes, I pulled part of it.
What a roller coaster!
Look, it's been 2 weeks. We don't remember.
I know.
This is what I...
There is the little issue of security. You know everything I know about Earth. Codes, defenses. We'll bury the gate. Don't worry. And don't even think about trying to send a bomb to make sure.
I wasn't.
Yes, you were. I know you.
Which is like a good reminder too of how like not ruthless Jack can be, but how practical and military he can be. Like, it doesn't matter that it's copies of SG-1, that's a security risk, and like the thought of a bomb crosses his mind.
Yeah.
I just realized that there's two equally smart Sam Carters out in the universe, and that's equally awesome. Well, but there was. That's equally awesome, but equally terrifying all at the same time.
Well, it's kind of like, I know we're really hopping way ahead, but like when Replicator like gives her that speech about how like she could like conquer the world if she wanted to, but she's got this like fucking moral code that won't let her. It's very similar.
Yes. Yes.
And then after that talk, we just immediately go back to the gate and we say our goodbyes to Harland and Robo SG-1, and that's the episode.
Pretty much. So there's a moment where Jack talks to Harland about how you're not supposed to live forever. So here I have it with a little bonus.
People are not supposed to live forever.
That's funny.
That's good. I like that. That's great.
Excellent.
Jack's just channeling his inner Freddie Mercury.
Uh-huh.
I don't want that forever, that's for sure.
No,
me neither. But again, sorry, not to like, we're getting to the rating part of the episode, so I guess we'll just go right into it because I'm about to talk about why I'm frustrated with this episode. But like, those are like big concept questions and like implications that I just feel get glossed over and not talked about in this episode. Living forever, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to like acknowledge that you're you but not you? Like a more detailed explanation of like the security risks and implications of having all of that information and data out floating around the universe.
Plus, there's a conversation that's happening as Jack walks away between the two Sams where she's like, I think as we go have a new experiences, we'll separate ourselves. But basically talking about how there are two of them exactly at this moment. They're the exact same person and how much that would fuck with your personal identity, right? Like, the only thing we know about ourselves is that we're unique from everyone else. And right now, there are two of them. But then there's also the conversation of now we'll diverge and become different people.
Yeah.
And that was like, as Jack walked away, you overhear the last little bit of that conversation. I'm like, that's a fascinating thing to talk about. Right.
And we're just going to brush over it. Oh, hey, we didn't talk about this, but... We're also, the reason we're not mad at Harland, FYI, is because it appears that SG-1 volunteered to help Harland. There's this kind of like, when original SG-1 wakes up, that they're like, hey Harland, what's going on? Like, is it over? Did we do it? Like, so SG-1 seems like they consented, volunteered to help. I don't know if they knew the extent of it. But again, we didn't really talk about it. A lot of implications. Who knows?
Sorry, I glossed over that part.
Oh, no, you're fine, dude. This episode was, like, a long time ago. All of this to say, I'm giving this episode a 3.5 out of 7. It's a solid right down the middle. Like, I checked my phone a lot during the episode. I only laughed a little bit. There wasn't that much laughter. I was frustrated with the, like, bringing up big concepts without really any satisfying, like, message or implication. So it's just, like, a perfectly middle-of-the-road episode. I'm not rushing to go watch it again, but I wouldn't like actively skip it during a rewatch.
I mean, you would watch it again because there's two Jacks.
There's other episodes with two Jacks. I don't have to go to this one. But thank you.
You know, I was just looking out for you. I know what you like, so I was just trying to be helpful. That's all.
More Jack. Double your pleasure, double your fun.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm gonna side with Jess on this. This one's about a 3.5 for me as well. I had the exact same frustrations where they'd be having these conversations and I was like, let's keep talking about this, or and the same frustrations of like, why is Jack the only one who's having an existential crisis? I don't understand. And I mean, it's mildly entertaining. When I went to watch it again today, though, I did fall asleep. So
a great sign.
Always a good sign. I do pretty much the best part about this episode, though, is this.
Come try ya! Come try ya!
Come try ya.
Kumbaya.
Come try ya. Come try ya! Come try ya! Come try ya! Come try ya!
Come try ya!
That's so great. Like
that bumps it to half. I have like from the 3 to 3.5. Just the the way he giggles.
I think you should send that to Jess. Manic. I think you should send that to Jess so she can make it her ringtone.
Oh, I would love that. Increasingly more manic Contraya. You can like speed up to pick up the phone.
I'm also in y'all's same tribe with a 3 to 3.5 for the same reasons that you guys have, how big questions were being brought up and how we never really got answers to them. But also the writing just didn't seem to fit for me, and I'm not bashing anybody, but like Janet didn't feel right, which is a big problem for me. Janet just didn't seem like she fit in correctly, or her voice wasn't well portrayed. Even Sam didn't feel right to me in this episode either. I get that she's all super sciencey and like is always down for science, but I feel that just from, I guess, the more we learn about Sam, the more kind of, I don't want to say emotional she is, but we see that she is an emotional person, and I feel like that would get an emotional response that you're, you know, a robot now and you're not like a human.
Yeah, I absolutely agree that Sam would have had an emotional response to this on some level.
And yes. I mean, I don't care who you are. If you wake up and you're a fucking robot and there's semen running through your tubing, you're gonna have questions.
And concerns.
So,
and concerns.
Yeah, I gave this like a 3. I gave it a 3. For all those reasons I just said.
Air metal award? Does anyone deserve
the air metal? Harlan, I would give it to Harlan. Should we give it to Harlan? I mean, he does.
Harlan did some shady shit.
No, but he does give us these clones of SG-1 who we get to see again later, and that's kind of cool.
Also gives us so many AU fic possibilities.
Oh!
Of a Jack and Sam that are not constrained by
Air
Force
regulations.
There's
actually a good Robo-Sam Jack fic.
Yes. I'm about to tell you the name of it. I have it on my phone. It's called The Lesson, and the author is Shiny Silver Girl. Anyways, it's on fanfiction.net. It's very, very good. I recommend it highly.
Okay, so that's the episode. If you liked it, please let us know. If you didn't like it, please also let us know. You can reach out to us on Gmail at chevronslock7@gmail.com or on Twitter at chevronslock7. Next week's episode is There But For the Grace of God, which we are super excited about.
Woo!
You can find me, Melanie, on Tumblr at My Stupid Dumb Flyboy, or on Twitter at Melanie Martian, MARSHAN.
You can find me, Jess, on Twitter at Prof Tenant, or on Tumblr at Professor Tenant.
You can find me, Chelsea, on Twitter at Cahils, or on Tumblr at Pianosa 2 to the Fighting 8th. Also, we will be getting our book club episode up pretty quick here. Someday? Soon?
One day. We're waiting on somebody to finish reading the book.
Wow. Okay, first of all, rude. Do you know in college, I used to read the books like the night before class. I was reading like 4
As
novels
you do.
A week. That's the way to do it. I am not worried. But we had, we had this whole schedule of like recording and posting, and everything just kind of went tits up after the Tin Man episode originally. We got fucked up over bad internet and bad software, and then real life just swooped in and kicked our asses. Kids went back to school. I got super sick. There was lots of, like, work shit that was just slowly sucking our souls from our bodies.
Family stuff, rugby.
Yeah, family, rugby, there, all kinds of shit. We're like real people. We're not just glued behind the computers 24/7 as Stargate minions. Although, one day.
The dream. I think I have a closing clip.
Have a good life.
Just said, have a good day.
Have a good life.
Oh, oh. I heard have a good day too. And it, I was like,
I heard have a good day. Okay. So, all right. I mean, it's 10:30, but all right.